It's February 4th, and we are in Sanhedrin. Tonight's shiur is going to be primarily on the Meisim Shehachli Yechezkel, which is on Bathari Beis and Beis. But before we do that, I want to cover one point from Sadi Aleph Amid Beis in the dialogue between Antoninus and Rebbe. The Gemara says on Sadi Aleph Amid Beis at the two dots, Amalei Antoninus the Rebbe. Antoninus said to Rebbe, Mipema chama yoitza b'mizrach v'shakas b'mayrav. Why does the sun rise in the east and set in the west? Amalei, Rebbe said back to Antoninus, Yihava ipcha namihach yihava amribli. If it would have been the other way around, you would have said the same thing to me. So if it would have been rising in the west and setting in the east, you would have asked me the same question. So in other words, the answer is, it's got to be something. So what do you want? Amalei hachi kamina lach. He says back to him, this is what I mean. Mipnei ma shokas b'mayrev. Why does it set in the west? Why does it go down in the west? So Amalei, he said back to him, kidei litein shalom l'kayna, in order to give shalom to its master. Shenamar utzva shalom l'chamishtachavim, because it says that the hosts of the heaven bow down to you, Hashem. And since the Shechina is in the west, the Beis Hamikdash faces west, that's the direction of the Shechina, so therefore it goes down in the west.
That clears it up.
Let it go until half the sky. V'titein shama, let it give shalom. V'tayol, and then let it go back. Let it retire. Meaning, let it go till halfway, and bow there, Takarish Baruch Hu, and then disappear. Rashi says, Dimakach miskavenes, if that's what the kavana is, that it's going to bow to the west. Lama haleches b'soich ha-mayriv, why does it have to go all the way to the west? Tava adam tzoshu rakia, let it go halfway. V'tishka l'sham, and then let it set there. U'misham tishtach havei klapei mayriv, and from there it will bow towards the west. Shekein derech b'nei adam, she mishtach havei berach, like lifnei ha-melech, because the normal way is you bow from a distance to the king. V'enu miskav kolkach, you don't go right up in the king's face and bow, you bow from a distance, you bow to the king. So why is the sun going all the way to where the king is and bowing over there? It should bow from a distance.
So the earth would then rotate like halfway and halfway.
Well, it's not clear what would have happened. I trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could figure it out, you know, a way of making it happen. But the question is that the sun should disappear there. Now, when you read this, the question is, what does he mean to ask? The sun should do what when it gets there? When it gets, it's going to be, right now the sun rises in the northern hemisphere, which is most of the landmass of the world is in the northern hemisphere. So the sun rises in the summertime, it rises in the northeast and sets in the northwest. And in the wintertime, it rises in the southeast and sets in the southwest. And it runs as an arc. So in the wintertime, it rises in the southeast and goes in a small arc and sets in the southwest. And in the summertime, it rises in the northeast and runs a large arc and sets in the northwest. In the northern hemisphere, above the tropic, it never gets directly overhead. Even on June 21st, whenever it's on the summer solstice, whenever the summer solstice is, it's at Chatzos, the sun is never directly over our heads because we're above the tropic, but it's close. So you know how it works. If you want to know the exact north direction, you know exactly which way is north, go out at Chatzos any day of the year and look at your shadow. At Chatzos, on any day of the year, you look at your shadow, it'll point directly north.
And then you have 6 more weeks of winter.
Right. Now, so so I thought what he was asking is let it go until halfway, and then either go backwards or set there in the south. So it would kind of go up halfway and then set directly in the south. But he can't mean that, because clearly the answer of Rebbe, which is going to be that we can't have the sun set suddenly, disappear suddenly, as he's about to answer, seems to imply that Antoninus' question was, let the sun go halfway, and then right there, somehow disappear.
Yeah.
Go into the heavens. Go wherever the sun goes at night, let it disappear. So Rebbe's answer is, Mishum Payalim, or Mishum Avrei Drachim, because of workers and because of travelers. That's the reason why it can't be that way, because of workers and travelers. Rashi says, what does that mean? Mishum payalim. Dilu kein haya. Because if it would be like that, machshech pisaim, it would get dark very quickly. Shekishacham be'emtsa rakia. Because when the sun is in the middle of the sky, mi'ira b'yayser, it shines very brightly. Usfurim shadayin yeshahus b'yayim. And people think there's still a lot of time during the day for the day. There's still more time in the day. V'yupayalim shayin b'malachtan, and the pilim would get involved in their work. They'd tarry in their work. Ad shechashecha, until it got dark. V'avidachim nami lo hayyayidin masayachshach. And also those who were traveling would not know when it was getting dark, Levakesh Lohem base Lina to go find a place to sleep. Ulakach Shakas Bamayr, that's why it has to set all the way in the west. Shekeshahileches, Umishta Peles, because as it goes and it diminishes, it gets smaller, it gets lower, Vileches, Vikala, and it goes and get the Kala Aira, and the sun in the light diminishes, Yaidin Shmagia Shas Chashecha, then they know that it's almost time for darkness. So what the Rebbe's answer is, it has to be a gradual process. It can't be a sudden disappearance of the sun. It has to be gradual so that people can schedule themselves. In a time, in an age which is pre-watches of any sort, then the only way to know what the general, they didn't have clocks, so what is the general time? You know it by the sun. And you know it by how high in the sky the sun is, whether the sun is past its apex, how low in the sky the sun is. You can get a general sense, and you know in the winter time things go faster, in the summertime things go longer, and you have a general sense for how much time you have left in the day. So a traveler knows how much longer he has to travel, and a worker has a general sense of how much more time he has to work. So you have these advantages in knowing when the sun is going to go down. So it has to be a gradual process. And if the sun would suddenly disappear at its highest point, you really wouldn't know exactly when that is. Again, without any clocks or anything like that, you'd see the sun rising in the sky. Now, if you're looking at it and you're watching it, so then you know as it's hitting its middle of the sky point, so then you'll know it's going to disappear. But if you're not looking, watching the sun, and I guess most people didn't just sit there watching the sun, they would go about the day and just judging by the light, you'd understand exactly what time it is. So it would disappear. And that would be too sudden, and it has to be a gradual process. So, what Rebbe's answering Antoninus is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a system where the sun would teach us Derech Eretz of giving, of bowing to our master, but it would also not be done in a way that would ruin the ability to schedule. HaKadosh Baruch Hu built in to the world, to the daylight hours, the ability to schedule easily. Now, the nighttime does not have that built-in ability, because unless you are a baki in the Shvili Derakia, you understand how the stars work, and you understand the time of year that it is, you can't know simply by looking up at the stars and the moon what time of night it is, because the moon does not rise at sunset and set at sunrise every single day of the month. At the exact middle of the month, when it's a full moon, then the moon rises at sunrise and sets at sunset approximately. But it fluctuates. In the beginning of the month, the moon actually rises during the day, and when the sun sets at the beginning of the month, let's say on the third day of the month or so, at that point, the moon is, when it gets dark and you can see the moon is low on the horizon, on the western horizon. It's almost ready to set. That's why most of the time when you do Kiddush Levana, you can see the moon outside of these doors in that direction, because it's towards the west. It's in the western area, getting down. It's going down towards the west depending whether it's the summer or winter. It's the reverse for the moon. In the winter time, the moon has a very high arc, and in the summertime, the moon has a very low arc. It mimics, it reflects what the sun is doing. So that the moon is always going to be in that general direction, because it's a southwesterly direction, because in the beginning of the month, when it gets dark, the moon is almost ready to set. As the month goes on, then the moon rises later and later in the day, so that when it gets dark, the moon is is higher and higher up and further away from the place where it's going to set. In the exact middle of the month, then the moon is rising at sunset and setting at sunrise, and then you have the other side of the coin, where the moon doesn't even start to rise until later on in the night. So that at the very end of the month, you can only see the moon only right before daybreak, and it's rising in the east. That's where you can see the moon, just in front of the sun. And then at a full moon, it's rising along with the sun, and you don't see it at all. It's because it's with the sun, and it's rising during the day and setting at night. So you don't see the moon at all. So you don't have a very clear idea of when things are happening at night the way you have during the day. During the day, it's always when the sun rises is daybreak, and when the sun sets, the end of the day. It's very clear. But you don't have that at night. So it's a fascinating thing. At night, we don't really need to have as much of a schedule as during the day, because the night is the time when people are inside. If it's before the time of electric lights, of artificial lights, so then you don't need to be outside, you don't need to know what's going on, and most people are inside anyway. We make a bracha every morning, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher nasa masech bina, lehavchin ben yom ben laila, that He gave the rooster bina, gave the rooster understanding, to discern between day and night. Now the rooster crows before daybreak, not at daybreak, because you don't need a rooster to tell you when daybreak is. Just go outside and look. When it starts getting light, you know it's daybreak. The rooster tells us before the time when the sun is going to start rising. When the rooster crows, you know that, now I don't know exactly when it is, I don't live on a farm, I don't know about roosters. But the rooster would tell you that you should be aware it's going to be daybreak soon. Now, if you would go outside the time when the rooster's crowing, before the rooster hear anything, you just go outside and look, it looks dark. It looks just as dark then as it does an hour earlier, and you have no idea when it's going to be daybreak. But then the rooster crows, and now you know, it's going to be light in a little while. And you can start preparing yourself to be ready to start davening when it's appropriate time to start davening. So the rooster gives you the sense of time at night that the sun gives us during the day. What Rebbe is telling Antoninus is that if the sun would suddenly disappear at its highest point, then the day would be just as bad as the night. We would have no warning that the night is about to happen. You see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built in to the Bria that there should be warning before a transitional stage. That there's warning before the sun sets, which is the time of switching from day to night. The warning is the sun is setting. Rabbi tells Antoninus it can't be any other way because there would be no warning. And then he gave us an animal that is able to warn us when there's going to be a transition from night to day, before it's going to happen. That there's before the transition, there's a warning. This is a simon for how things work. Change is traumatic. Sudden change is traumatic. When you don't know something is about to happen and it happens, it's traumatic. When things are forewarned, that you can prepare for them, you can deal with them, you can mentally be aware they're about to happen. We are aware of this. Let's talk, God forbid, tragedies. A person suddenly passes away. It's traumatic. There was no warning. God forbid a person gets sick and then passes away. There is a transitional stage. It's a warning. This is true in the Bria Bechlal. A woman becomes pregnant, and it takes 9 months, she has a baby. There is a transitional stage. The idea of being aware of something before it happens is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the Bria, which is a taiva to people. It seems to me that this is part of the idea of Nevuah. See, we live today without Nevuah. And we seem to be getting along just fine, even though we of course would prefer to have Nevuah, but we seem to be surviving. But it's clear from the Chumash and other places that we'd be much better off with Nevuah. But besides the obvious reason, because then we're really close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we're getting communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, besides all of that, But there's also the idea that of being aware of something before it happens. That seems to be something that is a taiva to us, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides. The Pasuk says, regarding the Nevuah in Chumash, the Pasuk says, I'm trying to find the pasuk so I can quote it to you inside. But the pasuk says, Navi mikibrecha me'achecha kamoni, tokim lecha Hashem elokecha. A Navi like me, you see? A Navi like me, Hashem is going, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem is going to set up for you. And you should listen to that Navi, Elav Tishmon. So Rashi over there says, if I can find it, I'll read you the Rashi, says that maybe you'll say, how will I know? Oh, you know where it is? It's by not listening to sorcery, not being involved in nichush and like that. That's what it is. So there, Rashi says you shouldn't be involved in these things. Coming to you, Hashem Elokecha. You shouldn't be involved in these things, in all of the sorcery and that sort of things that the rest of the world is involved with. You should listen only to a navi. But the way Rashi says it is that you should be involved with a Navi because that you'll say, well, how will I know the future? Hashem will give you a Navi. As if it's a taina that we're supposed to know the future. I'm sorry, I don't have the... What's that?
Chapter
18. Very good. May I confess? You remember talking to Hashem about that? Huh? For what? For time to see Hashem Elokecha? Yeah, that's it. Okay. Ki agayim ha'ele, Parshas Shoftim. Ki agayim ha'ele asher atah yoresh ha'sam el ma'inanim el kaisim yishma'u. They are involved in all of this sorcery. Hashem didn't give that to you. Navi mikir b'cha me'achecha kamayni yakim b'cha Hashem l'kacha. I love Tishmon. That's who you should listen to. So Rashi here says, Tamim tiyim Hashem l'kacha. Hithalachim abetmimus. Go with tmimus, with simplicity. V'tetzapalai. And hope to him. But like Tachkar Achar Hasidus, and don't worry about the future. El Kol Ma Shiyavi Alecha Kabel B'Tmimus. Whatever happens, you should accept. Va'az Tiyaimo Lechelko. You'll be with Hakadosh Baruch Hu. But then it says, Lo Yichin Nosam LaHashem Lokecha. Hakadosh Baruch Hu Lishmoy El Ma'anim LaKaisim. Don't listen to them. Sharei Hishra Shchina Alana Viyavur Mitumim. But rather, he gave you nevuah. So don't listen to the sorcery, and to the magic, and to the superstitions. Rather, he gave you a navi. So it sounds like there's an Indian in having a Navi to know the future. So it seems to me that this is the idea, that the idea of being aware of something before it happens is a way to deal with that thing. And that's the siman ledavar of the sun setting and the rooster crowing. And that's the bracha we make every morning. Ashanasa masech vivina lahavchin ben yom ben laila. That we should make a bracha every morning to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a way of knowing of a transition before it happens. That's the first bracha of the brachas hashachar that we make. On Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara asks, after bringing all of these rice to Chiyas HaMesim, the Gemara asks, V'neilif Mimeisim Shechi Yechezkel. Why don't we learn from the Meisim Shechi Yechezkel? Rashi understands, why don't we learn from there that after Tzfiyas HaMeisim, people are going to die again. That's why Rashi says it, because the Meisim Shechi Yechezkel came back to life and then they died. Others learned, including the Marsha, that this is a kash on the whole Gemara over the past few blot. Why are we bringing all these rayas to Tzfiyas HaMeisim? We have a story of Tzfiyas HaMeisim Beferish in the Navi. So why don't we learn from there?
I don't understand that question, because it says Rinai Mason, Chiyas Mason, Torah, right?
Yeah, but we bought rice from Navi also.
So, I mean,
Yeah, you're right. So it wouldn't be, this wouldn't answer a raya from the Chumash. That's true. But it is from, it is from Navi, from Nach. And it's more mafurish than anything else we've had. So the Gemara says, because this man, the Amar, holds that it was only a mashal. It didn't really happen. And then the Gemara brings a few opinions. Most opinions hold it did happen. But we have one shita that holds it didn't really happen. So the Gemara brings a few shitas. The Gemara says that Rav Elezer says that when they came back to life, they said, Hashem memis betzedek u'mechaya barachamim. Rav Yeshua says, they said, Hashem memis u'mechaya marid shov ayol. Rav Yehuda is the one who says that it's only a mashal. And Rav Elezer ben Oshav Yosei Aglili Omer, meisim shechin yechezka, olu l'Eretz Yisrael ben Osunoshim, olidu bonam v'bonus. That they got, went to Eretz Yisrael, and they married, and they had children. Amad Rav Yehuda ben Meseira al Rag, Rav Yehuda ben Meseira got up on his feet, v'amar, and he said, Ani mibnei b'neihem, I am from their grandchildren, their descendants, I come from them. V'halalu tefillin sheniach li avi abba mehem, and these are the tefillin that my grandfather, meaning my ancestor, left me from them.
Must be
Gassos. Must be Gassos. Rashi says, on that inning of the tefillin, Mehem sha'oisan tefillin hayu shalahem. These tefillin, they belong to them. Now this is a pelvic Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda ben Sarah should get up and say this, and that he should demonstrate it with a pair of tefillin. So we have to understand who are the Meisim Shefi Yecheskel, which is the next Gemara, who they were. There are several opinions about that as well. And what is the inyan of the Meisim Shefi Yecheskel? And we're going to talk about that this evening. And the Meisim Shefi Yecheskel is intimately connected to the story of Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, which you brought up as well, which we will talk about. It's likely going to take us two shiurim to cover this entire topic. Because of tonight we're only going to focus on Yecheskel, and we're going to leave Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah most likely to next week. You have a question?
What is the point of bringing this as a proof for Tehillat HaMetim when just because something happened once doesn't mean it's supposed to happen again?
It shows that it happens. That's the point. It shows that it happens. We had riots in the Gemara.
What we're trying to prove is that it could happen?
We had riots in the Gemara before. Some of the riots were, you remember, some of the riots were that if those who never lived came to life, so those who once were alive certainly will come back to life. Now, that doesn't mean it has to happen. It means it can happen.
Uh-huh.
So, here you have Maisa Yecheskel. It did happen. So, bring that. And that's where the Marsha says it. Now, So we have to get into all these details. But before we discuss the details of who they were and why this is happening and all that, this business of the tefillin intrigued me for years. It intrigued me, this business of the tefillin. What does this mean? You know, Rav Yehuda ben Meseira says, he stands up on his feet. Amad, Rav Yehuda ben Meseira al-Raglav, gets up on his feet. Vamar, and he says, Ani mibnei b'neihem, I am from their grandchildren. So it sounds like he's saying, don't doubt it. There's four opinions over here. You think they didn't? That it didn't really happen as a mashal? No. You think they came back to life and then died right away? No. They went to Eretz Yisrael, they married, and I'll prove it to you, because I'm one of them. I'm one of them. The halalu tefillin, shehiniach li avi abba mehem. These are the tefillin that my father left me for them. What is he adding to his story? Right? He gets up and he says, you know, I get up and I say, you know, I'm a direct descendant of David HaMelech. I am. And you know what? And this is the yarmulke that he wore. Shkayach. I mean, it proves it to you any more than me saying it? What is the tefillin proving anything more? What kind of statement is that? What is the message of the tefillin?
It's an oath.
What's that?
It's an oath.
It's an oath, but how does it prove his point? How does it
prove? What else are you going to bring? So you can bring a mezuzah? You can bring, I mean, there's not so many things you can bring.
How would anybody there know that this tefillin was from them?
Right?
Well,
that's true. Anyway.
Did the tefillin look different? Was he saying, this tefillin is from them? Look, see, it has Yecheskel engraved on it. I mean, what does it mean? Now, Rav Yehuda ben Meseira seems to have lived a very long time. Bechal should be aware that it seems he lived a very long time. We know that the B'nai B'Seira were, the Gemara in Bav Metzia tells us, that the B'nai B'Seira were very great very, very humble people, because they were in charge. They were running the show. When Hillel came up from Bavel, demonstrated that he was the greatest, Talmud Chacham, they stepped down and gave him the position of Nasi. They were the ones who were in charge, and they stepped down and gave him the position of Nasi. It's a very special thing that they did, to be able to give up a position because you realize that someone else who's more qualified, after you've been in the position already, that's a very harsh of a thing. So the Gemara is showing how the anivus of the Bnei B'Sera. The Gemara is, we know that Hillel lived 100 years before the Churban HaBayis. Before the Churban HaBayis Sheni, that's when Hillel lived. So the Bnei B'Sera apparently were alive at that time, 100 years before the Churban HaBayis. Now, they weren't children at that time. They were the leaders of Klal Yisrael. So they must have been mature adults who were already great Talmidei Chachamim at that time. We have in the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Zayin or Tzadi Ches, around that late Tzadis, we have a conversation between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Now, Rabbi Akiva was alive during the Churban HaBayis, but he was not yet a Talmud Chacham. He wasn't Rabbi Akiva yet. He became the great Rabbi Akiva after Churban HaBayis Sheni. So we have a conversation 100 years at least later, after Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, assuming that he's one of the Bnei Becerra, which I assume he was, after he steps, he's one of the ones who steps down to allow Hillel to become the Nasi. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, who at that time wasn't 15, I mean, I'm assuming at that time Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra must have been 30, 40 at minimum, to be the leader of Klal Yisrael, one of the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And then 100 years later, plus a few years, and he's having a conversation with Rabbi Akiva. So it just seems Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra lived a long time. Now, whether that is relevant over here or not, I'm not sure. But he lived a very long time. What are you looking up? You want to see? Okay. Okay, yes.
Sorry.
Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan have a whole shaila about after Chiyas HaMeisim, or even the Chiyas HaMitzvahs?
Yeah, okay.
And you have this Gemara, if it's played into
the door. Okay, you're chilling. Okay.
Ah, I mean,
the Navy was showing that they were chayav and mitzvahs.
Okay,
that's interesting.
They didn't say that they put them on.
Right, or maybe it's showing they weren't chayav and we're grandchildren.
That's why he gave it to his
kids.
So listen to a maisa. Listen to a maisa that's brought in the Beis Yosef. This is a maisa which in itself is intriguing, and I wonder if these two things are connected. We know that there is a big machlokes in tefillin, and that is the machlokes of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Now, we know that there's tefillin of Rashi, which everybody wears, and tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, which some people also wear. All the Paiskim say that this machlokes Rashi is the ikur lahalacha, and some people are machmir to wear a second pair of tefillin. You find it primarily with Sfardim and Hasidim. You find such a minhag amongst Ashkenazim. It's very rare to find such a thing. But okay, that's the chumra. And the chumra is discussed in Shulchan Aruch. What is the machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam? It has to do with what order the parashiyos are in. Everybody agrees that the first two parashiyos of tefillin are Kadesh Li and Mahaya Kiviyacha. We have Rabbi Asa sitting here who writes tefillin. So we have Kadesh and Mahaya Kiviyacha. But then the next two parashiyos, Shema and Vahaya Im Shamaya, Rashi holds that the order is Shema and then Vahaya Im Shamaya, which is the chronological order that you find it in the Torah. Rabbeinu Tam holds it's Vahaya Im Shamaya and then Shema. Because, it has to do with the way the Gemara presents it. When the Gemara discusses the order of it, he holds the two Vahayas are in the middle. That it's Kadesh Li, and then Vahaya Kiviyacha, then Vahaya Yim Shamaya, the two Vahayas are in the middle, and then Shema. Or another way to say it is the two Shins, Kadesh and Shema, are on the outside of the tefillin. Okay, that's a machlokes. Now, one of the, you should be aware, of course, you should be aware that Rabbeinu Tam had other disagreements with Rashi concerning tefillin, not just this. For instance, just like with mezuzah, where there's a machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam whether to put it standing up or lying down, the same machlokes is in the tefillin. That Rashi holds the parashiyos are put into the tefillin right standing up, and Rabbeinu Tam holds are put sideways, lying down. In that, we always do like Rashi. Even Rabbeinu Tam tefillin have the parashiyos put in like Rashi. It's just that they're written in the order of Rabbeinu Tam, but the way you put them into the tefillin is like Rashi. So we're not to call them Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin is really not 100% correct. Rabbeinu Tam would not have worn Rabbeinu Tam tefillin.
Why do they do that?
Because in that, nobody says to do like Rabbeinu Tam. It's only in the order of the parashiyos that there is a for some reason that shayla became that suffix, that machlokes became a suffix. Now, it's a curiosity that many people ask about this sort of thing. How did this suffix begin? People have been wearing tefillin ever since the Torah was given. We assume, right? It was never a point in history where there was no tefillin worn. We think, we assume that that's the case. So how did it happen that there should be a machlokes how to write the tefillin? Open them up and look.
And he's Rashi's grandson, so...
And he's Rashi's grandson. Well, okay, but that already, he's going like early... It's not, he didn't make it up.
Right.
He's going like earlier, you know...
Father did it differently.
Yeah, because he learned the sugya and he learned differently than his father. Yeah, that's a...
Could be the tefillin he put on were Rashi's tefillin, and he just, lahalacha, he held, like...
Well, that could be. It's hard to know.
He put them both on, but he put his
own
shirt.
But why don't they just open up the tefillin and see what it looks like? So somewhere along the line, apparently, there were seifrim who... How could it be? Like, every seifer is trained. Nobody becomes a seifer on their own. I mean, you learn from a Rebbe. Nobody becomes a Talmud Chacham on their own. You learn from a Rebbe. So where did it crop up? And even if you tell me that other machlokusim, the way they happen is because two people are sitting in shir, one hears it this way, one hears it that way. That happens. But here, all you have to do is open up your tefillin and look. You're not a Talmud Chacham when you're 13. You become a Talmud Chacham when you're older than that. So then you have tefillin from your bar mitzvah. Open them up and take a look at what the order. So it's very difficult to understand how it happened that this suffix crept into the performance of the mitzvah tefillin. So there is a fascinating maisa that's brought. The Beis Yosef brings a Tshuvas HaRashba. He says like this, that we have the Machlokes Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. This is in Simen Lamed Dalet in the Beis Yosef. The Rashba b'Tshuva Herech b'Davar Zeh. He discusses this. The Dacha Divrei Rabbeinu Tam, and he pushes away the words of Rabbeinu Tam. The Hemed Divrei Rashi v'Harambam, and he goes like Rashi and the Rambam, which they hold the same shita. So he goes like that. Uva Soifa Tshuva Kasav, and at the end of the Tshuva he writes Soif Davar. The last word is Daiti Naiti Karashi v'Harambam. My opinion is like Rashi and the Rambam. Ba'aleim Anu Soifchem v'Oisem Maisa, and that's who we go like. We go like Rashi and the Rambam. V'chein hayu noyagin arabinu yoyna v'ramban v'oysen maysa v'atzman ad kamashonai. So that is the tshuva. But it's not saying what I wanted to say. Hold on. Oh, okay, I started too far into it. I'm sorry. I'm going back a little bit. Okay. The kasav, this is not in the tshuva, Rashi, it's in the smag. The kasav smag v'hamar nachai. The Smag and the Mordechai write, Sheshalchu Ksav Me'eretz Yisrael, that they, I don't know who they is, sent a tzetel, they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, Shenafla Bima Shal Kever Yechezkel, that the Bima, the platform that was on the grave of Yechezkel, fell down, meaning it must have, you know, crumbled, whatever it is, it was there and it, for some reason it fell down, Umatsu sham tefillin yishanim, and they found a pair of tefillin under the bima, on the kever of Yechezkel. Yishanim ma'oid, very old. Kiseder harambam v'rashi. They opened up the tefillin, and they found that it's like Rashi. So there's this wild maisa that the kever of Yechezkel, which we know where it is, it's in Iraq. We know where it is. Those who have been to Iraq, Rabbi Horovitz, the army chaplain, has brought me pictures that he's been there and seen it. And there was a bima that was on the kever. Remember, the Arabs also hold of Yechezkel. They hold it. Right, otherwise they were desecrated. They hold of the Navi, even though there was an article recently, a blurb recently, in one of the newspapers, I guess the Hamadiyah, somebody gave it to me because I teach Yechezkel. One of the women gave me a blurb that they were desecrating some of the Hebrew writing on the kever. On the thing. But anyway, they don't desecrate the kever itself because they also hold that he was a Navi. They revere him. So there is this, but there was a bima and it fell down, and there's a pair of tefillin So let's open it up. Let's see who's right. They open it up, and it's Rashi. So it's a raya that Rashi's right. That's the Maisa.
Maybe that's why it's put in Geniza.
Ah, so those who disagree.
That's like the same is the same. They found the same thing with Tzara. They found Rashi's fellow in the And then so the people say Rebbeinu Tam said, oh, that's why they threw it away.
Right. So that's the response. The response is that maybe it was Geniza. It was because that's what
he in a kever. Like, why you put the Geniza in a kever?
But wait, yeah.
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 With the kever, it has, I feel like you wouldn't put like your old. Like,
no, I mean, Geniza.
It wasn't old, was it? Because it's considered burying it, just like you're burying the body.
Yeah, you're going to put in the cover of a prophet. I feel like you'd be
okay.
Together.
All right, but it wasn't actually in with him. It was higher. I mean, it didn't uncover the body of the Cheskel Hasv Shalom. It was, you know.
One of those yellow boxes next to it.
Yeah. So, that's the Maisa. That's the Maisa that happened. Now, what I wonder is this. If Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira gets up on his feet and he says, I am from their children. And these are the tefillin that they left me. To me, it sounds from the Gemara, just the way he says it, that these tefillin must have looked different than regular tefillin. Because otherwise, what are you telling me? What are you saying? These are their tefillin. It sounds to me like Yehuda ben Maseira was saying, these tefillin that aren't the same as all of your tefillin, where do I have it from them? That's where I have it from. I am wondering, I do not have any clarity in this, I'm throwing out what I'm wondering. This is a very
speculative
and early stage kind of thing. But I'm wondering if the difference that, obviously, there's a machlokes Rashi and Tam, we're going to apply the principle of Elu ve'elu de'ir lekim chayim. They're both right. They must both be right. What does Elu ve'elu de'ir lekim chayim mean? Rashi says in Ksubis that Elu ve'elu de'ir lekim chayim means that both are correct. But even though, of course, we're only going to pass in one way under certain circumstances, but if you change the circumstances a little bit, the svara, the logic behind the other opinion is also MS, and all you have to do is change the circumstances slightly, and the other one will be true. Neither logic is flawed. They're both true. The application could be flawed, but not the logic. That's what Eluvelo Divalakim Chai means that Rashi says in Ksubas. I'm wondering, if Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, I'm wondering if one is the tefillin of Olam Hazeh, and one is the tefillin of Tchiyas HaMeisim. Of course, that would assume that there is tefillin after Tchiyas HaMeisim. But I'm wondering if that's the idea, that in the Kabbalistic realm of things, one is an Olam Hazeh tefillin, and one is an Olam Haba tefillin. That's what I'm speculating. In which case, the Mesim Shehechya Yechezkel, since they're holding in Tchias HaMesim, their tefillin is not going to be the same as the tefillin of everybody else. Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira is saying like this, you're saying it never happened, it was only a mushel, they never lived. I'm going to tell you that, no, that Rav Elazar ben Yosef Yossi Aglili, who said that they came to life and they went back to Eretz Yisrael and they married and had children, that he's right. You know how I'm going to prove it to you? Because if he's right, then they are living in the stage of Tchiyas HaMeisim. If they're living in the stage of Tchiyas HaMeisim, then they would adapt the mitzvahs to the Tchiyas HaMeisim type of mitzvahs, if there are any changes. Again, very speculative. If there are any changes like that. We know, we've heard the idea that perhaps Beis Hillel applies now, but Beis Shammai will apply later on. But that sort of idea, that's the kind of idea I'm borrowing from. So then he says that I'll prove to you that Rav Elazar ben Yosef Yossi Aglili is right. Because, look, these tefillin are the tefillin of Tchiyas HaMeisim. And that's what I got from Avi Abba. He's not even saying that he wears them. He's just saying, these are the tefillin that I got from my great-grandfather who was from them. And that's why it's written differently. And I'm wondering if that's how it came into Klal Yisrael. Because since there were people living as Tchiyas HaMeisim Jews, and therefore the tefillin changed, and therefore you now have two pairs of tefillin, and that can create a suffix. Because now, just open them up. Well, now you have different pairs, different types, and that can confuse people, and now we don't know which one is right, which one is wrong. And then therefore, on the Davka, Abima, on the Kever of Yechezkel, through whom we have these Tchiyas HaMeisim Yidden, that's where the tefillin was found.
It was Rashi.
So the obvious flaw in what I'm saying, is it would come out that Rashi would be the Tchiyas HaMeisim tefillin, Rabbeinu Tam would be the Elam HaZeh tefillin, and it would seem that it should be the reverse, because it seems that Rabbeinu Tam is Al Pi HaKabbalah or something like that, while Rashi seems to be the mainstream, which would you would expect to be the Elam HaZeh. So, this
I don't know. Yecheskel was Bubba, right? So these the Mason Sheikh Yecheskel
yeah.
Through. Then
Eliyah.
So the
Bubba
has Rashi
telling because he didn't. Yeah, no, I know, but I'm bringing from this Maisa that it comes up through Yecheskel. Dafka through Yecheskel.
It doesn't change the
symbol. But maybe, okay. Maybe in Bubba they had Rashi and in Eretz Yisrael they had Rabbeinu Tam.
Maybe
that during the destruction of the first temple there was a
maybe during the time of Geula. Maybe you're right. During the time of Geula we would have a din of Tchiyas HaMeisim. I don't know. This is all very speculative, but this whole idea of the tefillin here and this Maisa that they found a pair of tefillin in the bima of the Kevin Yecheskel. Dafka Yecheskel and Navi. Like what? Where does that come from? So that's I'm putting these things together to suggest this, I think, pretty wild idea. Yeah.
So according to the Sefer, there are two Yehudim and the Sefer's.
Okay.
It was his grandson.
Okay. It could be.
That was Rabbi
it could
Kiva.
Be if the Sefer is right.
Yeah. And okay. It doesn't bring up
can
much
I have a
right.
Question on the details of Yecheskel?
One other thing I want to say. That the Gemara says the Rabbeinu Tam's right is Havayos, what's the lesson of the Gemara? Havayos Adadimino or something?
Yeah.
The Vahaya.
Yeah.
Vahaya is, and it will be. So I'm just thinking
In the Vahaya. Future. In the future, it'll be like, okay. Interesting.
I don't know.
And remember, Rabbeinu Tam held that you wear them this way now.
Yeah,
he didn't know. Not what I'm saying, he didn't know. Right.
Yeah, that's what prophecy in Bavel.
Yes.
And where were the Maisim that he was Machaye?
So it was in Bikas Beistur, which seems to be in Bavel.
Well, that's only one of the opinions. That's the fifth opinion.
No, the Bika that it was in, what seems
what
to...
What about the opinions of Bnei Ephraim? I mean, how did the Bnei Ephraim get...
How did they get out of Bavel?
How did they get all the way to Bavel?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because they were
question.
Killed in Eretz Yisrael.
That's a good question.
But they were killed in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, they went to Eretz Yisrael and they were...
They were killed by the
Eretz Yisrael?
Or on the way.
Yeah, but Bavel would be in the wrong direction.
They got lost. It's the wrong
direction. It's like a major, like... Yeah. Again, that's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know the answer. That's a good point.
Remember we said that the reason they were chosen to get revived because they never married Eretz Yisrael, so give them enough a chance to go to Eretz Yisrael? Which stems with the opinion of...
Okay, well, let's launch into that right now. So, who are these Meisim Sheikh Yecheskel? So, we have a few different shittas. We have one that they were from the Bnei Ephraim, that they were killed because they left early from Mitzrayim. So, they were killed. They left 30 years early. And then we have the people who are kafu b'tchias HaMeisim. That's who they are, people who denied tchias HaMeisim. Then we have... these are the ones who have no mitzvahs at all.
They don't have any wet mitzvahs.
Wetness of mitzvahs, right? And then we have that these were from the Bachura Yisrael. They were beautiful people.
Let's give the graffiti guys.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. The graffiti, right? Of the right, they put the Avodah Zarah on the walls of the Beis Hamikdash, which is also Nevuah in Yecheskel. And then you have that they were the ones who were beautiful people, and they were killed by Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so whatever, these are the different opinions. Let's take some of them before we get into the story of Nebuchadnezzar, which is itself intriguing. But let's take the Bnei Ephraim first of all. So the Pasuk says in Divrei Yom, it's quoted here in the Gemara, Ubnei Ephraim Shuselach Ubered Benoi Vesachas Benoi Velada Benoi Vesachas Benoi Vezeved Benoi Vishuselach Benoi The Ezer Ve'alad, don't be surprised by that way of writing. That is typical for Divrei Yamim. For Hargum Anshe Gas, and the Anshe Gas killed them, Hanoilodim Ba'aretz, that were born in the land. Machloikis, whether Hanoilodim Ba'aretz is referring to the Anshe Gas or referring to the Bnei Ephraim. Uchsim Ha'Yisabel Ephraim Avim Yamim Rabim, and Ephraim, their father, was Misabo many days. Vayavo Echav Lenachamai, and his brothers came to console him, and then he had another child after that. Now, the
So Rashi tells us this happened, if it was the Bnei Ephraim, it's because they left Mitzrayim 30 years too early. Because they counted 400 years from the Bris Ben Abisarim instead of counting 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak. That's what Rashi says. Now this is a Pella, because of this week's Parsha. I'm sure that all of you have already done Rishon in Yisra, and you've seen the Rashis already in Parshas Yisra. And the Pasuk says,
Vayichad Yisrael al kol ha-toiva she'asa Hashem li-Yisrael. And Yisrael literally was happy, although there's a drash on Vayichad, on all the good that Hashem did with Yisrael, that he took them out of Mitzrayim. Hashem sila mi'an Mitzrayim. So Rashi says, al kol ha-toiva, toivas haman, va'be'er, va'atayra, all the goodness, the man, the bear, and the tayra, Kulan, but more than all of the other, more than the man, more than the be'er, more than the Torah, Ashitzilay mi'an Mitzrayim, that he saved Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Why? What's the big deal? Why is that more than the man, more than the be'er, more than the Torah? Ad achshav lo haya eved yachol livrach from Mitzrayim. Until now, no slave was able to escape from Mitzrayim. Shai sar es misugeres, because the land was enclosed. Ve'elu yatsu shishim ribay. And here, 600,000 left. So he was amazed at the amazing that Klal Yisrael was able to leave because no one had ever left, but the Bnei Ephraim 30 years earlier had left, right?
Yisrael also left.
He wasn't a slave.
Successfully left. I think
they got all the way to Eretz Plishtim, and they didn't just the Targum says. In Divrei Hayamim. Now remember, Divrei Hayamim is in Ksuvim. So the Targum is not Targum Yonah's son. It's a later Targum. But the Targum over there says that they left with 200,000 people. 200,000 Bnei Ephraim left. Now don't be surprised that so many Jews, so much more than the other Shvatim. Remember that 80% of Klal Yisrael were killed before we left. So this was before that. So Klal Yisrael was much bigger. So you can multiply any of the Shvatim times 5. You know, when they're counted in Parshas Bamidbar, multiply that times 5 at least to get what it was before the Makas Choshech. So, if Yehuda had 72,000 people in Bamidbar, so that means he had 350,000 people, 360,000 people before Makas Choshech, if it was proportional. So here, Ephraim left with 200,000 people, according to the Targum, and got all the way to Gas, got all the way to Eretz Plishtim, where they were killed. So it's an amazing thing. So you're right. Apparently Rashi means that Yisrael was part of Eretz Mitzrayim being so enclosed that no one could get out successfully, because even if they could get past the defenses of Mitzrayim and the difficulty in the geography, not geography, the topography, right? They would still not make it past the enemies that were all around. Okay, that could be. Now it says in the pasuk that brought in the Gemara from Divrei Yomim, "Vayisabel Ephraim Aviam Yomim Rabim." Ephraim, their father, mourned many days. Now this was 30 years before they got out of Mitzrayim. That means it's 180 years after they came down. 180 years
still alive.
And Ephraim was still alive.
Well, didn't all the Shvatim die first before Yosef?
Didn't all the Shvatim die?
Well, does it have to mean Ephraim Mamash, or could be the
Shevet? The Shevet, right? So the Mefarshim in Divrei Hayamim seem to understand it was really Ephraim. So you said, but it's a Pella. How could Ephraim be that? I mean, he could
and
be alive.
His brothers had to be alive, too.
Well, he only had one brother that we know of, and it says brothers here. But we only know of Menashe. We don't know of other brothers. Now, even though it's possible he had other brothers, Rashi says in Parshas Vayechi that other brothers that would be born, Yaakov says to Yosef, any other brothers, any other children you have, they will join in with the Shvatim and Ephraim Menashe. They won't be their own tribes. Which means there could be other brothers. But Yeah, but they were born before Klal Yisrael came down. They were already there. Ephraim was Menashe. They sure were. Menashe was the Meturgman.
No, I mean, how old were they?
Well, it doesn't matter. It's 180 years later.
So,
you know, people, 5, 10. So they were 100. So he's 185. 185. Right? Anyway, they were born before the Shnas Harav. The pasuk says they were born before the Rav.
You know, it was 175 when he died.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So they're very old. I'm saying it's not impossible. Now, what Dr. Grove is saying that, well, one second, didn't all the Shvatim die? So we would have to say, if this is true, that it doesn't mean all of the. It doesn't mean Ephraim and Menashe. It means the previous generation, Yosef and his brothers. Vayamas Yosef, v'chol echa, v'chol ador ahu. Ephraim and Menashe are the next door. So even though they have a din of a shevet, but they are the next door.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So, but really, it's not such a problem. Because the pasuk says at the end of Vayechi, says, Vayar Yosef l'Ephraim b'nei shileshim. Yosef saw to Ephraim great-grandchildren. He saw... three generations. Gam b'nei Machir ben Menashe yuldu al birkei Yosef, and also the children of Machir ben Menashe were born on the lap of Yosef. So he saw his great grandchildren. Later on, in Parshas Matos,
that was Yosef saw his great grandchildren.
Yeah, great-great-grandchildren, but possibly. Depending on your own Shilei Shem. Now, in Parshas Matos, for sure, Machir ben Menashe was alive already, you know, shortly. He must have been an adult. I mean, they were born already way back. But the Pasuk says, when Klal Yisrael, at the end of the 40 years, at the end of the 40 years in the Midbar, they're starting to conquer Eber HaYarden, the Pasuk says... The children of Machir ben Menashe went to Gilad and conquered it. And they wiped out the Amori that were there. Vayitain Moshe es haGilad leMachir ben Menashe. Moshe gave the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe. Vayeshavba. Sounds like Machir was still alive. VeYair ben Menashe halach, and Yair ben Menashe went vayilkodes chavaisehem vaykrasen chavais Yair. So Yair ben Menashe was still alive. The Noivach halach by El Kodesh Kanas ben Isaiah. Noivach ben Menashe was still alive. The children of Menashe were still alive 40 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and they were born. Not only they were born, but their children were born before the death of Yosef. So they're already adults when Yosef dies. Now Yosef was 39 when the 210 years starts to be counted. And he dies at age 110. So Yosef dies, how much is that? That's 71 years into the 210 years. When he dies, he already has grandchildren great-grandchildren from Menashe. So that means Menashe's sons must have been, I don't know how old, I mean...
You're saying 100...
When he died, 71 years after the... I mean, you...
There's 130 years left this year, right?
129 years left.
Plus 40 years in the desert.
169 plus. You have to give them their age to already have children. So we're talking, they must have been close to 200 years old.
They didn't look a damn 150.
I'm saying, so it's not a Pella. I'm saying that Machir ben Menashe, Yair ben Menashe, Noiva, they must have been around 200 years old. So to say that Menashe was, that Ephraim was still alive 30 years before Yitzchak was alive is not such a Pella. They lived a long time. That's really what you're saying. That Yaakov
lived on. So... Wasn't there an issue of Yaakov being worried he wasn't going to reach the age of his father? He knew that he couldn't live longer than his father, right?
Right.
He was worried that he couldn't. Right. So
Yosef lost some of
his Yaakov was worried he wouldn't live longer than his Yitzchak was worried he wouldn't live longer than his mother. His mother died at 127. At 123, he gives out the brachas.
This idea that you're not going to live longer than your father.
You have to. Rashi says you have to be dayig. You have to be worried. People do live longer than their fathers. Okay. Yitzchak lived longer than Abraham. But you have to be dug, you have to be worried within 5 years before and afterwards. Within that 10-year span, you have to be worried.
Wasn't Yosef, did he take off some of his wife to give to Abraham?
Not Yosef, Adam Rishon.
But this is like they must have died right after that because they were part of the
within the 30 years, right? Ephraim must have
They must have died like Machir and Yair because that's the end of the Dora Hamidbar.
You mean that they made it
in? They had the Tekana.
Okay, so that's a Machlokes. That's a good kasha. So that's a good kasha. See, Bobby's asking that we know that they all died. The ones who left Mitzrayim all died. So how could they still be alive? Except for Kalev and Yehoshua, how could they still be alive? So there are other kashas on this because we know also that, for instance, the Nisim were the ones who were the Shaitrim in Mitzrayim, and they were beaten, and they didn't hurt their fellow Jews. Instead, they were beaten, and as a schar for that, they became the Nisim. We know that. Now, later on, at the end of the 40 years, and this is already after the Pasuk says that all of the Meisei Midbar died, they'd all died already, then we have the story of Zimri and Cozbi. And Pinchas kills Zimri and Cozbi. Now Zimri, the Gemara says, was Shlumiel ben Suri Shaddai, the Nasi of Shimon. That means he was there in Mitzrayim, had gotten beaten in Mitzrayim, became a Nasi of Shimon, and then later, unfortunately, he had the Mice of with Cozbi. So my grandfather, all of a sudden, used to ask this kasha. So how could it be that he was still, this is Kim Kasha you're asking. What do you mean? How could he still be alive? The Pasuk already told us in Chukas that they all died. So how could he still be alive? So one answer could be, but only goes according to one Shita, is that they only died if they were between 20 and 60. Tysus has two dais. Whether the Meraglim, Tysus in Bava Basra, I believe, has two dais. Whether because of the Meraglim, 20 and up died, or everybody between 20 and 60 died. But if you were over 60 at the time of the Meraglim, then they could still be alive 40 years later.
Why?
What's that?
Why?
He dashes in the front of the Sukkah. So that would answer this as well, that they were for sure older than 60.
I thought it was just that they had to die before they went into Eretz.
But the Pasuk says they all died. The Pasuk in Chukas says they all died. The Pasuk in Chukas says...
Why does that have to be in order?
What's that?
Why does that have to
be in order? No, it said before... That we know when it happened. The Torah tells us the date. Says that when Miriam died, they all passed away.
It's not possible there could be like a grandchild with the same name.
That's possible. It's possible. You're saying that when it says Ephraim, it doesn't really mean Ephraim. It means the Shevet mourned.
Right. But also, and with the Ben Menashe, it's not the same person.
Doesn't really mean Machir. Yeah, it could be the Machir.
The grandson who's named after his grandfather.
Or it could mean the Machir family. Yeah. Or the Yair family. Yeah. You know. Right.
Sarah,
that's a woman. The women all lived. There was no Gzera on the women.
Okay, but anyway, she had a
little
life anyway.
No? Yeah, but Sarah lives forever. I mean, she lived forever. Yeah, forever. Oh, she lived forever. Right. Okay, we're still in the middle of Yechezkel. We have to still deal with the issue of the Nebuchadnezzar and what's going on over here, and then, of course, also how it ties into Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, which both of them happened on the same day, the Gemara tells us. That the Nes of Shefi Yechezkel and the Nes of Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah, commander of Kibshon Eish, happened simultaneously. So we have to deal with that connection. That's going to be next week's discussion. I don't think that we'll get into, even though we have to cover Yehoshua Kohen Gadol and the story that the Gemara brings with Achaz ben Kulaya and Tzidkia ben Maasya, but that I think is going to be 2 weeks from now. I don't think we're going to get there next week. I think we still have too much to talk about.
The greatest pickup line in the history of the
Gemara. That's right.